Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Text 22.
Prachodita yena pura sarasvati vitanvata jasya satim smritim huidi svalakshana padurabhut kilasyatak same rishina rishabhat prasidatam. Prachodita yena pura sarasvati vitanvata jasya satim smritim hridi svalakshana pradurabhut kilasyata same vishina vishabhak prasidatam. Prachodita, inspired. Yena, by whom? Pura, in the beginning of creation. Saraswati, the goddess of learning. Vitanvata, amplified. Ajasya, of Brahma, the first created living being. Satim smritim, potent memory. Hridi, in the heart. Swa, in his own. Lakshana, aiming at. Pradurabhut, was generated. Kila, as if. Asyataha, from the mouth. Saha, he. Me, unto me. Vishinam, of the teachers. Vishabaha, the chief. Prasidatam, be pleased. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. May the Lord, who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. Purport. As we have already discussed herein before, the Lord, as the Supersoul of all living beings, from Brahma to the insignificant ant, endows all with the required knowledge potent in every living being. A living being is sufficiently potent to possess knowledge from the Lord in the proportion of 56/4, or 78% of the full knowledge acquirable. Since the living being is constitutionally part and parcel of the Lord, he is unable to assimilate all the knowledge that the Lord possesses himself. In the conditioned state, the living being is subject to forget everything after a change of body known as death. This potent knowledge is again inspired by the Lord from within the heart of every living being, and it is known as the awakening of knowledge, for it is comparable to awakening from sleep or unconsciousness. This awakening of knowledge is under the full control of the Lord, and therefore we find in the practical world different grades of knowledge in different persons. This awakening of knowledge is neither an automatic nor a material interaction. The supply source is the Lord Himself, Dhyam Patihi. For even Brahma is also subject to this regulation of the Supreme Creator. In the beginning of the creation, Brahma is born first without any father and mother, because before Brahma there was no other living beings. Brahma is born from the lotus which grows from the abdomen of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, and therefore he is known as Aja.
Thank you.
This Brahma, or Aja, is also a living being, part and parcel of the Lord. But being the most pious devotee of the Lord, Brahma is inspired by the Lord to create, subsequent to the main creation by the Lord, through the agency of material energy, material nature. Therefore, neither the material nature nor Brahma is independent of the Lord. The material scientists can merely observe the reactions of the material nature without understanding the direction behind such activities. As a child can see the action of electricity without any knowledge of the powerhouse engineer. This imperfect knowledge of the material scientist is due to a poor fund of knowledge. The Vedic knowledge was therefore first impregnated within Brahma, and it appears that Brahma distributed the Vedic knowledge. Brahma is undoubtedly the speaker of Vedic knowledge, but actually he was inspired by the Lord to receive such transcendental knowledge as it directly descends from the Lord. The Vedas are therefore called apaurusheya, or not imparted by any created being. Before the creation, the Lord was there, Narayana Parovyaktat. And therefore, the words spoken by the Lord are vibrations of transcendental sound. There is a gulf of difference between the two qualities of sound, namely Prakrita and Aprakrita. The physicist can deal only with the Prakrita sound, or sound vibrated in the material sky. And therefore we must know that the Vedic sounds recorded in symbolic expressions cannot be understood by anyone within the material, within the universe, unless and until one is inspired by the vibration of supernatural, Aprakrita sound, which descends in the chain of the cyclic succession from the Lord to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, from Narada to Vyasa, and so on. No mundane scholar can translate or reveal the true import of the Vedic mantras, hymns. They cannot be understood unless one is inspired or initiated by the authorized spiritual master. The original spiritual master is the Lord Himself, and the succession comes down through the sources of Parampara, as clearly stated in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So unless one receives the transcendental knowledge from the authorized Parampara, one should be considered useless, vipalamata. Even though one may be greatly qualified in the mundane advancements of arts or sciences. Shukadeva Goswami is praying from the Lord. By dint of being inspired from within by the Lord, so that he could rightly explain the facts and figures of creation, as inquired by Maharaj Parikshit. A spiritual master is not a theoretical speculator, like the mundane scholar, but is Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. The verse discusses Saraswati, who is self-manifested within the heart of Brahma in the beginning of creation. Saraswati is divine sound, a Prakrita Shabda, that Prabhupada discusses in the purport. We are familiar with sound in its material form, which conveys meaning, but is fallible like everything else material. Nothing in the material world is eternal, so we also perceive sound to be temporary. It enters our ears, and it ceases to be. In 30 seconds, it's arti, it's bang, 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 we'll stop. The sound will cease. But there is eternal aspect of sound. The original sound, this is just material reflection. This is not real sound. Real sound is emanating from the spiritual world. Golo Kera Premadona Harinama Sankirtana. The holy name of Krishna is a gift descending from Goloka. The Vedic sound is coming from the spiritual realm. Vak Devi, Vak, Saraswati, divine speech, or the goddess of speech, all articulate sound is produced by Mother Vak, Mother Saraswati. The human beings and the demigods are able to live their lives and express their intelligence. Their intelligence is able to function only by the grace of speech. Without speech, you cannot have human life or superhuman life. Then you're only a dumb animal. Animals have very rudimentary power of thought, and they have no language. But human beings have the power of language. This is a spark of divine intelligence given as a gift to the human race and to the demigods. By the power of speech, human beings can address their prayers to the demigods, and the demigods can perform their service to the Supreme Lord only on the power of speech. It's reflected even in the Western scripture, the Bible. In the beginning, God said, "Let there be light." So that is the power of speech. It creates. God said. He didn't push a button on a computer terminal. He spoke. Words came out of his divine mouth. "Let there be light." This is the Old Testament of the Bible. By the word is fiat, the divine order, the words of God, creation occurred. Only because God spoke it. All, and that is a correct idea. Creation begins with sound. Sound is the first material element. Everything else is created from it. And transcendental sound creates reality. We were discussing the other day how the mantras of the Yajurveda are used by the specialists, the Advaryu priests, to create the superworldly, sacrificial situation. The priest of the Yajurveda chants the Yajurveda mantra. He addresses the clay pot. "Oh, you are the womb of Aditi. You are the womb of the earth." And the pot becomes transformed. At the beginning of the Pravargya sacrifice, which is performed every day twice by all Vedic Brahmanas, this is the basic Agnihotra sacrifice. It's an offering of warm milk at sunrise to Indra. At night,
or Indra and Soma, at night to Agni, I think. I can't remember. Soma and Agni maybe at night. Anyway, in the morning, you have to offer the warm milk to Indra. So, first of all, the first mantra of the Yajurveda, Om Ishe Torje. Oh, you are for food. You are for strength. This mantra is meant to be addressed to a stick of a palasha tree. You're supposed to take a small stick from the palasha tree and chant this mantra. The Yajurveda priest chants the mantra to the stick. Why? Because he has to use the stick to drive away the cow's calf so you can take the cow's milk. If you don't drive the calf away, the calf will take all the milk. But you have to take a spiritualized stick. You have to chant the stick that you are for offering this. The purpose that we're using you, O stick, is to offer the milk to Indra. This is our obligation. So you are for food. You are for the offering of milk to Indra. You are for giving Indra his strength, and then we gain our strength by making the offering. Anyway, the Yajurveda priest creates the situation by the powerful use of language. Language can create. Similarly, in the court, the judge passes his sentence. I sentence you to be hanged by the neck until you are dead. May God have mercy on your soul. So by saying those words, the man is going to die. You know, he has created the situation just by speaking them. Or the judge says, I declare you man and wife. So the marriage is formalized, is made a fact by the judge uttering those words, I declare you man and wife. That is the use of language to create, the special power of language. But a person must be empowered to exercise that capacity. The judge can utter those words. If ordinary man says those words, they have no power. But the judge sitting on the bench, who was authorized, he is empowered to create the situation by his words. Similarly, this is the power of Saraswati. The whole creation is produced by the power of language. In the beginning, that Saraswati, the goddess of speech, the whole power behind creation, especially the power behind higher intelligence. If we cannot think in words, then we cannot think, we cannot have any higher reasoning. We can, like animals, form very rudimentary ideas in our head just from images, from sensations. But higher thought depends on speech. Even without opening your mouth, we're using words in our head to think complex thoughts. So language is required to have higher intelligence. Brahma needs as much intelligence as he can get to organize an entire universe. Even to organize a small business. Jai Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Shri Gauranitai. Even businessmen who want to organize a small enterprise have to sit down and discuss things for hours and hours, how to plan the business. So many words are spoken. Then they hire a lawyer who's an expert in verbosity, in writing wordy documents, and they pay the lawyer thousands of rupees an hour to write and write and write, undecipherable, language, legalese. So many words are expended just to organize a mundane business. What to speak then of how much intelligence and how much power of language is required to organize an entire universe? So Brahma is born with the power of speech within him. Otherwise he can't do his job. He cannot organize the universe. Prachodita yena pura, in the very beginning, Saraswata, Mother Saraswati, the power of speech,
sent there by the Supreme Lord. She is the maidservant of the Supreme Lord, but she has, Brahma has been delegated or been empowered with all the capacity of speech by the gift of the Supreme Lord. Swalakshana, she is self-manifest. Everything else manifests from speech. When we have words at our disposal, when we know a language, we can explain things, we can give names to things. But where does the language come from? Who told us that these words mean this and that? Of course, we learn it from our parents, we learn it from our friends, our young friends when we're a child. We learn the meaning of language. But where does language come from? It's just the arrangement of God. It's arbitrary that in English, God is called God. In Russian, he's called Bog. In Sanskrit, he's called Bhagavan. It's just arbitrary use of sounds. The same sound will mean something else in a different language. It's just a convention, but it is God who establishes that convention. And originally there is one divine language, the sound of the Vedas, that manifests in the heart and in the and appears from the mouths, the four mouths of Lord Brahma. Then we get four Vedas. Brahma, so vitam vita jasya smitim. Satim smitim riddhi, that power of speech inspires the pure intelligence in Brahma's heart. Empowered by Van Devi, by Saraswati, Brahma is able to figure out how to create. He creates the demigods, his sons and the others, the Prajapatis, the sages, the demigods, and he has to empower them to participate in the creation. Each of the demigods has his scope, range of authority, responsibility to help the creation. Brahma is called Vishwasrik, the creator of the universe, but he's not the only creator. He has many assistants. So the word is also used in the plural. Vishwasrijaha, the creators of the universe. Brahma, and also the great sages and prajapatis and demigods, they're all working together to organize and manufacture the material world. How does he empower them? Also by speech. And this is the beginning of the parampara, guru parampara. He is the original guru. How does he give knowledge to his disciples? By speech. That is how every disciple receives knowledge from his guru. That is the standard process. There is this, you know, bogus idea of shaktipat, that the guru just touches you in the head and there's an electric discharge and some mystic osmosis. He loses all his power and you gain it. This is not the standard process. Standard process is speech. The guru speaks, the disciple listens, because the guru can understands what he's saying, he knows how to speak properly, the disciple knows how to listen and is faithful, there is actual communication. And by that normal, natural process of verbal communication, transcendental knowledge is passed on from guru to disciple. The disciple becomes empowered by the strength of speech. So it's not only that Saraswati is important to Brahma, for creating the universe. It's important to anybody who wants to receive spiritual enlightenment. You must depend on the power of speech. You may not be a good speaker, but you must at least become a competent hearer. Anye tveva majananta shudvanyebhya upasate. Krishna says in the Gita that people realize the absolute truth in various ways. Some by Jnana Yoga, some by meditation, some by devotion. And others don't have much power of discipline of their own and don't have much spiritual capacity. But others, Anye Tveva Majananto, even though they don't have special knowledge of their own,
There are no scholars, they're not scholars or yogis or great mystics or performers of austerities. But śrutvān yebhyo upasate, they are able to hear from others who have transcendental knowledge. And by hearing from those who have knowledge, they can also be engaged in the worship of the Supreme Lord. Even though their intelligence is very simple, their strength, they don't have great spiritual strength, but if they listen faithfully, they can be properly engaged. Any human being. So that process of hearing, of receiving the empowerment of divine language, that is the most important thing. Brahma imparted the original Vedas to his sons. But the Vedas are very deep and very esoteric. In Kali Yuga, no one can understand the meaning of the original Vedas. Nobody. A few brahmanas may memorize the Vedas. There are still Vedic Gurukulas in South India, in Kerala, elsewhere, where five-year-old boys are trained to memorize the Vedas. At least they still make some attempt in a few places. But who can, even after memorizing, who can understand the Vedic mantras? In Kali Yuga, nobody. Scholars speculate, brahmanas read their commentaries and get some idea, but no one has a clear understanding of what the Vedas are actually talking about. So therefore, in Kali Yuga, we don't have recourse so much to direct access to the original Vedas. They are there, but we can't understand them. Srila Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha says that therefore, well, he goes through several steps of the argument. He proposes first that the Vedanta Sutra, written by the editor of the Vedas, Vyasadeva, explains the esoteric and reconciles the apparent contradictions of ideas found in the Vedas. But the Vedanta Sutra itself is very concise, cannot be understood without a commentary. Try to understand what the Vedanta is talking about without any commentary. Cannot be done. And then the commentaries are coming from all different schools of thought. The Mayavadis have written their commentary. Each school of Vaishnavism has written a different commentary. Even the Shaivites have their commentaries on Vedanta. And the mundane scholars are picking it apart from their own critical point of view. So there are a dozen or more different interpretations of what the Vedanta Sutra is saying, all contradicting one another. So we're still left confused. So therefore, Jiva Goswami says, okay, what makes it possible to gain the Vedic knowledge in Kali Yuga, especially for ordinary men, are the Itihasa and Purana, the Puranas and the epics like Mahabharata and Ramayana. They make the transcendental knowledge of the Vedas accessible even to common men. Stri Shuja Dvija Bandhu Nam Traina Shuti Gochara. The original Vedas are not accessible to the women, the Shudras, the unqualified members of the Brahmin families. So for them, for those who are not qualified as proper Brahmanas, Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata, in which all the important ideas of Vedic knowledge are presented. Sarvarta Paribrimhitam. All the Vedic messages are contained in the Mahabharata. Similarly, Ramayana is there, and 18 major Puranas. So Jiva Goswami proposes that this is a source of practical Vedic knowledge in Kali Yuga. But then he looks at the problems even in trying to study the Puranas. Some Puranas propose that, in different Puranas, propose that different persons are the supreme. Some Puranas, or some parts of some Puranas, clearly indicate that Lord Vishnu is the supreme absolute truth. But other Puranas, other parts of some Puranas, glorified Lord Shiva, or Saraswati herself, or other demigods. So again there is confusion. So finally, Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha says if there was just one scripture that summarized and reconciled all the ideas of the Puranas and the Vedas, which was available to us in its entire form without distortion, which was clearly explained by authorized commentators, then we'd be in a good position. And actually we are, because that scripture, that definition is fulfilled by the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the one Purana that explains everything unequivocally and points properly to the absolute truth. So Srimad Bhagavatam is our source of knowledge. The original transcendental knowledge, the power of Mother Saraswati, was revealed in the beginning to Brahma in the form of the four Vedas. First the Omkara, then the Gayatri Mantra. We read in the Brahma Samhita that Saraswati, Divya Saraswati herself, initiated Brahma in the Gayatri Mantra. And then Brahma gave that Vedic knowledge to his sons, to his nine principal sons. He taught the different departments of the Vedas. But in the modern age, we don't have access to the original Vedas. We cannot understand them. We have Srimad Bhagavatam, and we have our... And how do you begin your training in assimilating the spiritual sound, aprakrita shabda? In the traditional ancient system, a Brahmin boy received upanayanam. He received the Gayatri Mantra. And then he could begin his Vedic education. He may study grammar or arithmetic before that, but he does not begin reciting and studying the Vedas until after he gets upanayanam. First the mantra, first initiation, then the education begins. So we are also following the same process, although not in the traditional Vedic system, because we're not qualified. Nobody is qualified, really, to study the original Vedas in Kali Yuga properly. So we are receiving initiation in the Pancharatrika system, especially as taught by Narada in the Narada Pancharatra. We are following that system. We get our Diksha, Vaishnav Diksha. We receive the Gayatri Mantra. We receive the Gopal Gayatri Mantra also. In our Sampradaya, we have seven Gayatri Mantras. Then our Vedic education begins. But we study the Vedas. We study Nigamakalpa Taror Galitam Balam, the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree, Srimad Bhagavatam. That's where we get our Vedic knowledge from, primarily, from study of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, recommended process, recommended by Rupa Goswami. Receive the mantra. He recommends five most potent processes of the 64 basic processes of sadhana bhakti. He says five of them have special potency. So one of them is chanting the Lord's names. Receive the mantra and chant it. The mantra itself is your key, is the key that opens up the door of spiritual sound. It is a the mantra that you receive from your guru is transcendental sound that awakens your spiritual intelligence. Chant the mantra. So of the five main processes of sadhana bhakti, Rupa Goswami indicates one of them is Nam Sankirtan, chanting the names of the Lord. Also, studying Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees who have a real taste for it. Worshipping the deity of the Lord with love and faith. When in the Pancharatrika system, you receive the mantra and you use the mantra for worship, for worshipping the deity especially. That is the Pancharatrika system. So we are also practicing that, and Rupa Goswami has recommended that as one of the five most potent elements or most potent methods of sadhana bhakti. Then the other two of the five are to associate with devotees who are more advanced than yourself, who have a similar mood, a similar style of devotional service to your own style, and who are sympathetic, who care to go to the take the trouble to give you their mercy. Associate with such devotees. That's the fourth. And fifth, to reside in Mathura Mandala and other holy places where Krishna performed his pastimes. He specifically says Mathura Mandala. And he says that these five processes in particular are so potent. Shraddha Duri. Even if you don't have much faith in them, it doesn't matter. Just like a particularly potent medicine. It will work whether you believe in it or not. You just swallow the medicine, it will work. So these five processes will have their effect, even if you don't have much faith in them. Just do them. Just take the trouble, accept hypothetically that maybe they work, and do them. Other processes, the same guarantee is not there. Without faith, they don't have much potency. But these five are so powerful that even without believing in them, they work. And they work bhava janmani. The effect of them is that they will awaken. They will purify your heart so that love of God can begin to awaken in your heart. That is the purpose of sadhana bhakti. And these five elements of sadhana bhakti are the most effective ways to reach that goal of awakening love of God in the heart. We develop transcendental knowledge not for its own sake. We worship Saraswati not separately, but we worship Saraswati as one of the consorts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that she can help us, the transcendental knowledge can help lead us to the Lord's lotus feet. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who are trying constantly to worship me with faith, I give them the divine knowledge by which they can approach me. So that is Krishna's promise. We want to take shelter of Mother Saraswati in order to approach Krishna and become completely surrendered servants at his lotus feet. Okay, I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. That is... Well, here Saraswati Devi is the name of Bhaktisanta Saraswati. But he has the name Saraswati because he is especially empowered by the goddess of learning. There are, in the Advaitavad system, in the system of Dashanami Sannyas established by Shankara, this is the name of the given to the most qualified sannyasis, those who are particularly learned. The most learned sannyasis are called either Bharati or Saraswati. The highest ones, the most learned, are called Saraswati. So that's the most prized and reputed title for a sannyasi in the Shankara system. So in the Gaudiya system, in the Vaishnav system, usually we use 108 names instead of those 10. Saraswati is not very commonly given to Vaishnav sannyasis, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was given that title because he was so learned, such an empowered representative of the goddess of learning. He was actually given the title not by the Vaishnavs, but by the society of astrologers that he was associated with. When he was a young man, before he took sannyas, he was practicing astrology. He had an astrology school in his father's home. He was editing astrology magazines back when he was 17, 18 years old. And the astrologers, the astronomers, gave him the title Saraswati, Siddhanta Saraswati. Actually, Siddhanta, they meant, was the Surya Siddhanta, astronomical Siddhanta. But he got that title. That's actually divine inspiration, that the mundane astrologers gave him the title Siddhanta Saraswati. And then he became Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. That became his spiritual name. So Saraswati there means the goddess of learning, because he's specially empowered by her. In the prayer to Prabhupada, we're saying Namaste Saraswati Deve. We're offering obeisance to Prabhupada because he is carrying on his preaching mission under the auspices, under the authority, following the, carrying out the desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Okay. Thank you. Anything else? No, it's not a samasa. It's two separate words. Saraswati Deve. No, it is a samas, yes. No, what are the two pronunciations?
No, some devotees pronounce it as Saraswati.
Instead of?
Saraswati.
No, it's not Saraswati. It's Saraswati Deve. It is a samasa. So it's a short I. That's just a grammatical technicality. But if it was two separate words, it would be Saraswati Deve. I don't think that fits the meter. I think you require a short syllable at the end of that word. Saraswati Deve. Da 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 da. So it's a short syllable. If you made Saraswati, it would have to be a long syllable. In Sanskrit, the letter A, Akara, must be long. In Kannada, it can be short or long, but in Sanskrit, it has to be long. And it doesn't fit the meter. So it's a samasa. Saraswati Deve. Okay? I think? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's a minor point of pronunciation.
I was witness when His Holiness Trivikram Swami was visiting Bangalore.
Yes.
At that time he had corrected, he said not to pronounce it like that. Saraswati should be Saraswati.
What is it written?
Written Saraswati.
Really, with the te?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I'm corrected then. Saraswati Deve. I don't see how that fits the meter, but I guess, that's the way we have it written then, right? Saraswati Deve. Yeah, okay. Okay, excuse me. It's the other way around. It doesn't change the meaning at all. It's just a question of whether you consider it two separate words or whether the two words are put together in a samasa. Okay, I guess it's two separate words. I just thought it didn't fit the meter. But okay, so Trivikram Raj is right, and I was wrong. Yeah, I'm corrected. Some devotees want to say Saraswata Devam. There's, you know, early on in the movement, there was two different versions floating around. Pradyumna Prabhu asked Prabhupada, and in April 1971, Prabhupada wrote to him that it should be Saraswata Deve. So we have Prabhupada's, you know, own opinion on that, that not Devam, but Deve. I think it's April 11th, 1971, letter to Pradyumna. Okay, anything else? Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.